The Justin Robert Young program is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/JURY. So here's the deal. We put out the word for a Jury in Your House tour. And I've gotten some responses, but I'm not going to lie to you guys. I had kind of assumed, based on some of the early reaction, that the Northeast wanted to do the Jury in Your House tour, and I don't have the people to do it in the Northeast. I got some people in Massachusetts. I got some people in Maryland. I got some people in Jersey. But everything's a little bit too disparate for right now. So I am officially reopening the Jury in Your House tour pitches. If you would like for me to come to around where you are, then please go ahead and email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put Jury in Your House in the subject line. Meanwhile, if you want to support the show, just go ahead and do it at patreon.com/JURY. Again, patreon.com/JURY. And you want to know what? Let's stop talking about how we do the show. What do you say we just do the damn thing?
Ugly ain't the half, look at you. Well, you got blue teeth and you only got two teeth, but I kinda like to see you smile. And it appears that over the years you've turned into a big old steaming pile. And she said, yeah, I know I ain't no supermodel. I said, you ain't a hand model, baby, but that's fine. By most people's standards, but you're all right by mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Justin Robert Young Show. My name is indeed Justin Robert Young, but hell, if we're all here, you might as well just call me Jury. So much to do today on the show, but there's something that I did forget. Again, you have an opportunity to get free stickers at Stickers from Stickers or DIAF, my Diamond Club sticker emporium, right? We sell them right there, Stickers or DIAF.com, but you can win free stickers if you sign up for our mailing list at bit.ly/stickers or DIAF. And we have a winner for this week, Brian Hitchcock. Go ahead and check your email. See if it's there. I know it's there. I sent it before the show. We are going to send you free stickers. So just email back an address. You get free stickers. We're going to do this every week on the show. But what about the show itself? Well, I'm glad you asked there, folks, because we've got so much here. Alex Jones is in a custody trial wherein, to combat his ex-wife saying that he is an unhinged maniac who is screaming about conspiracy theories and turning the frickin' frogs gay, he said that he should not be held to the example set by his radio program because he is a performance artist. This sparked a lot of stuff on Twitter. I got a lot of these tweets, much in the same way that I got a lot of tweets about the professional wrestler Kane running for mayor in Tennessee, because these are just an intersection of my interests. People know what I'm into. They know I am fascinated by Alex Jones, and they wanted to hear me talk about it, and I will. Very heartened to read the early reviews for Guardians of the Galaxy opening on May 6th. lot of very positive reviews from the first press screenings last night. I'm going to give you the little cheat sheet on how I read early reviews and why I'm not quite as excited about the Guardians hype as maybe others would be. I'm going to pitch another holiday for you. This one will be the combination of 2 days that happened this week. One of them is today, and the other is on Thursday. Folks, I'm going to pitch to you 420 tax day. And we got a really gross story. It might be the grossest story that you've ever heard, and you will hear this week. We'll get to all that, but let's start with Alex Jones. So here's the story. The Austin American-Statesman has been covering the custody trial between Alex Jones and his ex-wife. This is a big story, especially local to Austin, because, number one, Austin is one of those cities that loves its locals, right? It is a limit. Oh my God, what is happening here?
Connection.
Is this the goddamn about healing? Austin American Statesman? Who's playing this goddamn music? I swear to God. Autoplay ads. Like, come on. You're killing me. You're absolutely murdering. You're murdering me. Why do you insist on killing me dead, autoplay ads? They're just the worst, and especially when you're just trying to, like, do your show last second before preloading anything. It just makes it really, really, really annoying. Anyhoot, let's go ahead and take a look here at this Austin American-Statesman story. So I do not get accused of misreading it, we will read from the top of the article. At a pretrial hearing, I swear to God, I swear to Christ. All right, here we go. At a recent pretrial hearing, attorney Randall Whittley told District Judge Orlinda Naranjo that using his client's Alex Jones on-air InfoWars persona to evaluate Alex Jones as a father would be like judging Jack Nicholson in a custody dispute based on his performance as the Joker in Batman. Christ, the references on this guy. Like, that's like a 30-year-old reference. Like, he's not even the most recent Joker in Batman. Moving on. He's playing a character, Whittley said of Jones. He's a performance artist. But in an emotional testimony at the hearing, Kelly Jones, who is seeking to gain sole or joint custody of her three children with Alex Jones, portrayed the volcanic public figure as the real Alex Jones. Quote, "He's not a stable person," she said of the man with whom her 14-year-old son and 9 and 12-year-old daughters have lived since her 2015 divorce. He says he wants to break Alec Baldwin's neck, and he wants J-Lo to get raped. She goes on, "I'm concerned that he is engaged in felonious behavior, threatening a member of Congress," she said, referring to recent comments about California Democrat Adam Schiff. Quote, "He broadcasts from home. The children are there watching him broadcast." This is a story that will continue to go on. Let me walk you through this one from my perspective. First and foremost, I'm fascinated by Alex Jones on a couple levels. Let's leave the public persona out of it for a second. I'm fascinated on a man that has built an independent media empire because, I don't know if you guys have noticed, I'm trying to do my best to build my own independent media empire. So regardless of whether he is just kind of dispensing pleasantries or painting a lovely little field like a Bob Ross or spitting incendiary political diatribes, I'm curious to see how one goes from a guy screaming to a guy screaming with a little mini empire behind him. I am fascinated by Alex Jones because he draws a tremendous political reaction, or a tremendous passionate reaction from people. He is somebody that was kind of ahead of the time when it came to understanding that conspiracy theories are something that are going to become more and more mainstream as the monoculture shattered, and now we are all in our little tiny groups. And I'm fascinated by Alex Jones because he shops at the same liquor store as my co-host on Night Attack, Brian Brushwood. Those are the three main things that I am fascinated about Alex Jones about. So it would stand to reason that if I were to meet Alex Jones, the three questions that I would probably ask up top would be, how did you build your media empire? How true are you on the air, and how much is an act? And what do you buy when you go to the liquor store that my co-host Brian Brushwood frequents? Obviously, the second of those questions is what's on trial here. And believe me, I would love to sit down with Alex Jones over a fine bottle of whiskey that we bought from that same liquor store. And I would love to pick his brain. And I would love it if he were 100% honest and there was no guile behind it. And I was able to dissect exactly what he believes and what he doesn't. But man, when I read this story, I was kind of skeeved out. I was kind of really skeeved out just because, number one, custody hearings are awful. I really, there's just no other way to put it, right? How many people right now in the chat room have been through a custody hearing? Either your friends, neighbors, coworkers, literally anybody around you that's been in a contentious custody hearing. Because if you have not, allow me to illuminate. It's ugly. It's gross. Usually custody hearings are the fruit of a poisoned union. There's a lot of things that have gone on for a long period of time that are just kind of gross and bad. They've festered for way too long. And now you have the worst of all situations, especially when it comes to kids. A binary. Either you get the kids or I get the kids. Or we come up with some very contentious, like, you know, let's let the medical aid through during wartime kind of negotiation, wherein there's an every other weekend situation, stuff like that. So when I read this, a few things immediately popped to mind. I feel weird about it. And I don't think we're going to get a lot of real information out of this. Because, ironically, in a trial where everybody needs to tell the truth, so the city or Travis County, wherever this is being contested in, can say whether or not this person should have custody of these children, very rarely is the truth proffered. Instead, you are presenting your best case. And the best case for the ex-wife is to look at, you know, you can throw a rock on the internet and hit an Alex Jones compilation. In fact, here, I'll tell you what. I'll show you how easy it is. I'm just going to type in Alex Jones Goblins because it is my favorite Vine of all time, and I feel like everybody should see it. So here we go. This is just Alex Jones. This is my favorite Alex Jones clip of all time. Here we go.
Charging into a goblin's nest to not get some goblin vomit and slop and blood on him. I just don't want to catch him in bed with a goblin. But if he's in there rolling around hacking him up and he's got a goblin guide you know, taking him into the cave, I'm not expecting him to not get dirty, especially up to his ankles. I don't want to see him kissing goblins, having political succubus with goblins. I don't want to see him ingratiating goblins. And so what do we expect him to do?
All right, now hold on. So that clip is the long form. Here is the mega mix from the late Gawker Media. This is the mega mix of goblin, Alex Jones's goblin talk.
Trump charging into a goblin's nest, kissing goblins, goblin vomit, catch him in bed with a goblin. Trump charging into a goblin's nest.
Kissing goblins, catch him in bed with a goblin. So, of course, this is, you know, her, the ex-wife, the best thing that she can do is show that to a jury, not me, a jury of their peers, and say, this person is obviously not fit to raise our kids. But is that Alex Jones? I don't know. Maybe. If you took the worst of the stuff that I've said and put it together and told me I could or could not have an opportunity in life, I'm sure that you would be able to show somebody who had no context that I'm an absolute lunatic, racist moron, right? And that I shouldn't have the ability to do whatever I wanted. So that's a sensitive element. But it also just kind of like highlighted something that has become kind of my worst thing, my worst part of the internet. And that is just the search for facts regardless of where they come from. The search for proof regardless of where it comes from. And this is not directed toward any one group, because this is a problem on the internet. And man, I know it's not you guys. I know it's not anybody listening to this, okay? I know it's not anybody who is hearing my voice right now, whether recorded or live. You guys get it. You guys understand that there is a tremendous value to reaching across and talking to people that you disagree with. There is a tremendous value in looking at somebody that you absolutely despise and instead of making them an unperson, trying to understand their motivations. There is a tremendous value to branching out, whether or not that's painful, sticky, or icky. But I'm sorry. I can't abide by the idea that we're going to judge somebody by a custody hearing where the worst thing that's said is their public statements. Even somebody who can be as odious as Alex Jones. And make no mistake, as much as I enjoy some of the sillier elements of him, there are horrific things that this man has said about the false flags of Sandy Hook and 9/11 and stuff like that. Those particularly pop to mind. But let's look at where we're getting this stuff. Let's understand that. And if I can indulge in just one little bit of reckless speculation. This woman is applying for custody now in 2017, right? They got divorced in 2015. It is fairly rare that a husband gets to keep custody of kids after a divorce. That's just, you know, that's just, I don't know the context of what they're saying. All I know is that it's very rare that the kids don't go with the mother after a divorce and they are not with the mother. I don't know anything else, but just reading that stuck out to me. Maybe it's fitting that we can end our Alex Jones conversation with a little bit of a conspiracy theory. Let's go for something a little funnier. This comes from treehugger.com. File this one under never, not even once. The headline reads, University uses 1,250 gallons of bad mayonnaise for power. Last December, Michigan State University was faced with quite the conundrum. Freezing temperatures compromised the stores of mayonnaise for its dining services. 500 2.5-gallon containers. It wasn't spoiled, but it wasn't usable. Usually when food products are not quite right, the MSU food stores donates them to the local food bank. But because of the lower quality and the huge amount, that wasn't an option. It was also too much mayo just to throw out and waste. Luckily, the school has sustainability officers tasked with curbing waste that came up with a great idea. The university has an anaerobic digester that helps power farm areas and buildings on the south side of campus. The high sugar and fat in mayonnaise made it the perfect fuel for the digester, which processes thousands of tons of food waste every year. The decision was fairly easy, said MSU Culinary Services Sustainability Officer Cole Good. It was a perfect situation to turn what could have been a catastrophe into something positive. Oh, God. Oh, this next one, I might throw up. I might actually throw up reading this. Over one day, a team of 12 staff members spent 8 hours dumping the containers into the dumpster that held the digester's food stock. After pouring the mayo from each carton, the team had to take them all back to the kitchen to clean out the excess mayo to get the containers ready for recycling. Quote, mayonnaise was getting all over. Some carpet was getting smeared. Oh, God. I didn't think I was actually going to get sick on this, but just literally thinking about it, like, has made me... Mayonnaise was getting all over. Some carpet was getting smeared, and we all had dress clothes on, said Residential and Hospitality Services Sustainability Officer Carla in Nantancy. This was not anticipated at all. Carla! Carla! You had how many? 500 2.5-gallon containers of mayonnaise? You dumped a bunch of skunky-ass mayonnaise into a gigantic dumpster and then rinsed out the containers so they could be recycled? And you didn't anticipate that it might get a little messy? Never. 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 Uh-uh. Sorry. No. If somebody came to me and said, we got to dump all this mayonnaise into a container because it's going to power the entire South Campus for more than 4 years, I would say, I'm sorry, brother. I got to head on down that dusty trail. There is zero possibility, let alone washing them out, right? Let's say Nazis had my family and they said, dump all this mayo in here or we're going to shoot all of them. I would sacrifice. I would say, sure. You want to know what? For the life and livelihood, happiness of all of my family, I indeed, weird Nazi bargainer, I will take your dark deal. If then he said, okay, but then you also have to wash them out so they can be recycled, I'd say, hey, listen, guys, que sera, sera. I hate that you guys all got to get shot by this weird Nazi, but I mean, come on, we all got our breaking points. Because you can dump all that mayonnaise. Ugh. You can dump all that mayonnaise. And hold your nose, right? You can dump it and hold your nose. With that, Breathe through your mouth. Breathe through your mouth. But if you have to wash it all, oh, oh, God, you just have to like activating all the. Oh, I'm actually going to throw up. I might actually throw up on stream. Is throwing up on stream against the TOS? Is that against the TOS? I'm going to ruin this new desk we just put in here by throwing up on it. Oh, God. I can't even talk about it anymore. I'm just moving on. Please never send me articles like that again to justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. It's weird. It's too bad. How about something that makes me happy? Ladies and gentlemen, Guardians of the Galaxy. I just can't stop thinking of the mayo. I can't. Oh, God. Do you think coffee will make it better or worse? Make it better? Oh, God. I think it made it worse. All right. I can't talk. This mayonnaise started. So much mayo. Gallons. 502. Oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Let's go to Variety. I'll just read from Variety. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 First Reaction tease emotional film full of surprises. Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige previewed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 for media Monday night, but he spent the first half hour talking about upcoming projects. Apparently, there was a behind-the-scenes clip of Black Panther. But here we go. This is the main event. All the tweets that came out. So if you don't know how these things work, this is how it normally goes. If you are a movie critic, you go to press screenings. Press screenings normally happen on Tuesdays. This gives you an opportunity to write your review so it can come out on Friday, which in a different world was the big day that you would want to convince people to go see a movie, because people go to see movies on Friday and Saturday nights. And back in the day, there were these things called newspapers that really were needle movers. Now for big movies, things are a little bit more sophisticated, and Marvel is certainly on the forefront of this. They know they have a product that not only audiences but critics enjoy, so they try to maximize their opportunities. So it does not shock me that they did this press screening on Monday, giving them the full news week to build hype. It's Monday with May 6th, so right now it's like 3 weeks until Guardians comes out. They want everybody to be talking about how good Guardians is. So let's go ahead and read some of these tweets. Reviews are embargoed. That's another thing that you might not know. So your favorite movie review site, if they want to keep up a good relationship with Marvel, cannot run their review until a certain time. I don't know what the embargo is for this one. But some people break the embargo to get the views. Some people don't. Yada, yada, yada. Here are some of the tweets. Tweets are not embargoed, especially on personal accounts. So you can just say, hey, I went to go see a thing and I really liked it. But you're not going to review the whole thing. This is from Germain Lussier. I believe he is from IO9. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is filled with tons of surprises and an unexpected amount of emotion. Another Marvel winner. Eric Davis says there's more beauty and depth and 80s love in Guardians Volume 2 than any other Marvel movie. It's a watercolor acid trip full of awesome. A lot of these were retweeted by James Gunn last night. It seems as if there is a bit of a winner on our hands. So, what should you look for when you are reading these reviews, there are a few kind of telltale things. There are certain things. I was a movie critic for a year. I tried out being a movie critic for a year. It made me not like movies. Because you see so many of them. Here's the thing that happened to you when you become a movie critic. Number one, you tend to realize how formulaic movies are. Number two, you wind up over-rewarding movies that might not be fun to people that don't see a lot of movies, but rather you are praising because it did not do the same thing that you were expecting because you see this pattern over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. So here's one of my favorite ones. Deliberate. If you ever see the word deliberate pacing in a movie review, that means it's boring. But I liked it. If it's boring and you didn't like it, it's just boring. Deliberate pacing, right? So if you're going to go ahead and read these things, tons of surprises and an unexpected amount of emotion. What does that really mean? It means that there are bigger connections to the larger Marvel universe that are going to happen, and it means that somebody might die, right? In this other one, beauty and depth and 80s love in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 more than any other Marvel movie. It's a watercolor acid trip full of awesome. This kind of makes me worry. On its face, you might think that this tweet from Eric Davis of Fandango, that this is a great review. More beauty and depth than 80s love in Guardians Volume 2 than any other Marvel movie. It's a watercolor acid trip full of awesome. But more beauty means it looks good. Obviously it looks good, right? You know, it's a Marvel movie. All the Marvel movies kind of look good. Depth, well, that's good. Depth for a Marvel movie is good, although they've always been a little bit more deep than the other fare. And 80s love, this is what makes me worried. Because, you know, we don't want to get Rogue One up in this. Where like, oh, Star Wars fans will love it. So you might have read that when you saw the Rogue One tweets. Star Wars fans will love it. That just means there's a bunch of Star Wars stuff. That means it's a good movie. It means that, you know, at some point, you know, for 80s love, a Teddy Ruxpin might show up, right? At some point, there's a light bright. At some point, somebody does a Ronald Reagan impression. Maybe that's good. Or maybe it's just useless, tacked on garbage. We don't know. We don't know. That being said, I'm very excited that that Guardians is getting the reviews that it is getting. I already have my tickets. Thursday night at the Alamo Draft House here in San Francisco. And man, that cannot come soon enough. One of the things long time listeners to this show know is that I'm a big fan of pitching things. I love pitching things, right? I specifically love pitching new holidays. Many of you might remember my Valentine's Day idea. The Valentine's Day could be the night of bacchanalia for the single. It could all culminate in a absolute no-holds-barred orgy at the Golden Corral. Allow me to unveil to you my latest. This week, right now, as we speak, I'm recording this podcast on tax day, April 18th. It's normally earlier, now it's later. For that reason, it puts us in the same week with colloquial folk holiday 420, April 20th. YOLO blaze it. a festival for those who partake in marijuana to get high as they possibly would like, visit with other stoners, exchange gifts and tidings. I remember in college, it was Stoner Thanksgiving. You would just wake up, you'd get high, you'd kind of peacefully make your way to another dorm. Happy 420, you'd doff your cap. You might even bring gifts. Ah, I've brought you these Sour Patch Kids. Happy 420. Happy 420. Well, times have changed. We live in a more decentralized world than we did when I was in college, and marijuana was something to be frowned upon legally. Now, in the state that I live in, as well as several others, it is legal recreationally. In many more, it is legal medicinally. I think it is safe to say that if you look at the political trajectory of the marijuana issue, it is likely that we are going to see recreational drugs, the recreational element of it, probably federally recognized within the next 10 years. That would be an assumption, right? So this is not for everybody, but in the same way that I was looking out for the single on Valentine's Day, I am going to look out for the stoners on tax day. Because what tax day and 420 are lacking are each other. 420 is a folk holiday that everybody kind of laughs off. Tax day is an absolute boring slog where you are parted with large sums of your money if you work independently like I do, or you have to do a bunch of BS paperwork. Even if you do get a refund, you still got to file a lot of stuff. What if they were the same day? Now, all of a sudden, 420 is something that is federally recognized. Also, people are kind of understood that, hey, I got to get taxes done. 420's coming up. Let's go ahead and make it a federal holiday as well. I'll tell you what. Imagine, you know who's cashing in? H&R Block. That green logo of theirs all of a sudden goes to a whole new level. They've already gotten into some weird places where they got all these like fun ads of like chicks twerking and like throwing money all around. And it's like, hey, have a cool, funky taxes. Imagine if you walked into H&R Block and it was like, all right, we're going to file your taxes today. And also, here's a gravity bong. Oh, my God, you're so excited. And you've got that old dude, right, with the glasses that does all of like, hi, I'm H&R Block's meep-bop-boop. Did you know that meep-bop-meep-bop-boop-boop-bop? And it's still like that same thing that you would make in your dorm. It's just like a plastic, not that I would know how to do this, it's just like a plastic trash can that you have a half-cut-out 2-liter, fill it about 3/4 of the way. You know, you're probably going to have to poke in the hole. You maybe put a screen up at the top. Oh, my God. It'd be great. Did you know that all of your miles are deductible? This would be great. And I say we started here in California. California should have their state tax due date on 420. It would make 420 special. It would make tax day more tolerable. Make that green. And then pay that green. And then smoke that green. 420 tax day. YOLO. Blaze it. JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com is where you can send your emails for this show. Let's go ahead and dig into it. Sean writes, hey, new United Air slogans. We put the hospital in hospitality. Board as a doctor, leave as a patient. We have a red eye and black eye flight. If we can't beat our competitors, we'll beat our customers. Would you like a window seat or a concussion? It's a bloody good airline. And the alt-friendly skies. We did have another email, or another a plane email. Let's go ahead and read this one from Steve. Steve! I just listened to your latest episode when you mentioned Spirit Airlines, and I thought I'd share the abridged experience I had with them when flying round-trip from Chicago to Las Vegas last week. We made the mistake of booking through a third-party site where the extra charges were not explained or even mentioned. A couple of days before the flight, I received an email regarding all the things I still needed to pay for. The email also explained that if I didn't pay for the stuff online, I'd be hit with even more exorbitant fees at the gate. $100 per checked bag, $10 to print a boarding pass, etc. They successfully managed to nickel and dime my girlfriend and I for an additional $300. In addition to everything you mentioned in the last show, I'll also add that the seats don't recline. The tray tables are literally the size of an iPad mini, and we spent the last 15 minutes of our flight being solicited for the Spirit Airlines credit card, while being told that Spirit Airlines is, quote, the most profitable airline in the world. When that proclamation was made, at least a third of the passengers on the return flight erupted in what I can only categorize as sarcastic/angry laughter. As you can possibly imagine, I blasted them with both barrels when the customer satisfaction survey hit my inbox. Spirit Airlines is essentially a Walmart with wings, so I'm not sure anybody gave a shit. Factor in some very dickish employees, and I think I'd rather risk a beating on United than ever fly with Spirit again. Aw, crap. I should have said that in the survey. I mean, listen, dude. For everybody that likes to complain about United, and United deserves to be in the barrel, there are some crap airlines. And I'm with you. There used to be a sign at the Atlanta International Airport where Spirit Airlines said, like, we don't want to have to charge you this money at the gate. And it's like, it was just the creepiest, like, I mean, if you didn't dress that way, then maybe you wouldn't get harassed. You know, yeah. Again, man, I've flown United a lot. I'll continue to fly United because my experience with them has been delightful. But all I'll say is that, you know, if we really want to roast an airline, there's a couple worse ones out there. Crunchy writes, it's come up in a couple episodes now about Louis C.K. getting away with saying the N-word in his act. I just stumbled across a quote in Doug Stanhope's book, and it's slightly relevant and interesting. In his part of the book, Doug is talking about his first Comedy Central stand-up recording and how awful it was because he wasn't allowed to literally do anything in his act that he had previously written. Quote from Stanhope's book. Later that night, I watched Louis C.K. film his half hour. He went up and said whatever the fuck he wanted, including fuck, and everything else I was told I couldn't say. I was rocked. I asked him afterwards why he was allowed to get away with that. He told me that they tell everybody what they can and can't say, and he just ignores them, knowing that they've spent all this money to film, so they'll just bleep stuff out rather than not air it, and never do the amount of time that they ask for. The less time you give them, the less that they have to make it unfunny in the edit. At Louis C.K., man, he gets the process. He gets the process. All right, Vlad writes. We have our Sean So Poor segment. Vlad writes in, I'm in a situation akin to Sean, but not as severe. I present to you the segment, Vlad Wants More Scratch. I went to college for a semester, enrolling in the mechanical engineering college close to me. I racked up a debt to the tune of $3,000. Boy, stop, I added editorially. Over the course of the year, I gained a full-time third shift job at a bakery. I won't say which one, but it did just get bought out by Krispy Kreme a few weeks ago. I currently am in debt to the tune of a six-pack of beer, preferably from a local brewery. I think I did pretty well for a high school graduate who dropped out of college starting with $5 to my name. I'm no longer satisfied with my job, though, mainly due to an HR situation that was not handled well, in my opinion, and has left me working with an individual that encouraged me to kill myself. Well, now. Hey, now. Didn't sit well with me 6 months ago when it happened. Doesn't sit well with me now. My question to you is this. What are some of the things that I can do before I settle down into a career, most likely as an electrician or a refinery worker? I'm still only 20 years old, and I didn't get the college experience since I lived at home during the semester. I plan on quitting my job in May and starting working in early June, and I want to try to have adventures for the next year or two before starting a more sustainable life. Any suggestions for places to see, things to do, jobs to try, and I'm open to. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I could give you some recommendations, or I think you misnamed your bit. How about Vlad wants the adventure of a lifetime? How about everybody email in the coolest things you've ever done that Vlad could do within 2 years? We'll make a little list for him, and then he'll go on the adventures, and he will let us know how they go. This seems like a pretty good idea. Captain Kipper says there are just good jobs to learn from, like bartending, right? I think, yeah, there's plenty of, like, little things, but I would say I'll leave it up to everybody else. I'm curious to see what people say. The Floyd writes, my question is this. My current job has freed up my mental energy now that I am no longer constantly raging, and I have an itch to engage in some sort of creative endeavor. But I find myself still strapped for time and physical energy trying to balance a 40-hour a week in work with added travel and nighttime college classes and household chores. Do you have any tips on how to satiate the creative itch on a limited time, money, and energy budget? Or should I just realize that I don't have the resources for even a moderately sized project and should just focusing on finishing college with some sort of degree to show for it and spend my idle times working through my oversized Steam library while I enjoy my newfound middle-class wages? You know, I think the biggest thing about budgeting your time and energy is you really have to budget it, like literally write it out, know what you're going to do every day, and have a realistic opportunity to achieve those goals. You know, don't just say, I want to do 50,000 things in a day. So, in general, you just got to throw your hat over the wall, you know, and find something that you like and don't get too hung up on it. If it makes you happy and you're able to complete it, keep doing it. If it makes you unhappy and you can't do it, then maybe that's not for you. Maybe you try a baby step version of that larger thing if you really like the larger idea. But, you know, you try to do a little small thing. Any time can make some kind of progress. You know, you just got to start doing it. And there's more time in your day than you think. That's also another truism. Noisemaker Joe writes in, what is it with different companies, governments, and seemingly, especially, the cops always saying our employees were just following proper procedures whenever they do something that tons of people on the internet are horrified by? Is that supposed to make people feel better? Yeah, we pushed him out of the airplane while it was flying, and he landed on a playground during recess and exploded blood and guts all over these children, forever scarring them and costing their families collectively millions of dollars for therapy. But I assure you, we were following our proper procedures. Obviously, if these procedures are causing the outrage of scores of people, maybe those procedures should be changed. Maybe beating up unarmed people is something that should be, I don't know, not part of the procedure for getting them to do what you want. Why do these people never follow up with, quote, and we were looking into changing these procedures so this doesn't happen again? What is it about these sacred policies and procedures? Or maybe it's just a status thing. I wouldn't understand. So when you hear a larger organization saying they were following proper procedures, what you need to read that as is, from the inside, we're not immediately going to backdoor somebody who might have even been a little bit in the wrong. Because as much as they have to deal with public outrage when it pops up, they have to deal with employee morale every single day. And if you are a company that capitulates to the public, especially in jobs where there is just high stress, like airlines, then you can be looked at by your workforce as being not a good boss. That as soon as something goes wrong, you're going to say, ah, it was this asshole's fault, don't blame us. When the brand has more ability to take on blame than, let's say, this one person. So that's usually what you hear, and that's the same for police and stuff like that. But I do agree that we're at a point now where there needs to be some kind of moderation. And I think with United, part of it was just them opening their mouth and saying stuff a little too definitively, a little too soon. Like, no one's going to kill them if they take a day to figure this one out. You know? It's like, hey, we're investigating. We will be back with our findings within X amount of time. But at first blush, bling, blang, bloom. Whatever they want to say. Lucas writes, I heard you mention about people complaining about you not updating the RSS feeds for your various show in a timely fashion. I don't know if this is a solution that everybody would want, but even one that you would want to publicize. But I found that the RSS feed for your SoundCloud and subscribe to it with my podcast app. That way I can get the shows as soon as you post them to SoundCloud. You should be able to do that. By just going to SoundCloud. So figure that one out. Nikki writes, the day after listening to your It's a United Thing episode, a woman at work was wearing a shirt stating it's a Ramona thing you wouldn't understand. Not being a Ramona myself, I knew it would be fruitless to even ask what made Ramona so special, you ask, or so special, because I truly never could understand. Also, do you suppose that this grand appropriation of It's a Black Thing could be interpreted as an older, more facetious example of All Lives Matter? Just a thought. Anyway, I just wanted to share that synchronicity with you. I mean, that's certainly a politically loaded comparison to make, but I don't think it's totally disassociative, right? I just think it, you know, All Lives Matter tends to be a little bit more aggressive to Black Lives Matter, whereas I think It's a Blank Thing, you know, sure, it is, you know, it's, you know, something in a long line of, you know, things that are hot in Black culture that just kind of seep into white culture with, like, oh, look at Miley Cyrus twerking. Craig writes, I totally understand the newfound ambition I heard in the podcast last week. I get a taste of it every year when I do my taxes, too. I look at my achievements for the year in a handy number form and think to myself, man, how am I ever going to retire? I usually resolve to trade stocks more actively to squeeze a few more bucks out of the market, then get discouraged after losing a few thousand and end up moving what's left to cash or index funds, depending on my mood. Man, I'm never going to be able to retire. Good luck with your thing, though. Aw, Craig. Furry Viking writes, I'm taking a lot of paralegal classes at the University of Cincinnati. Paralegal, what? And one of the more recent classes I took broke down what rights a ticket to anything gives you. Before I go further, here's a disclaimer. Those that have legal careers will know why. I'm not a legal professional, and this is not legal advice. This is only the rantings of a buzzed paralegal student. But back to the tickets. It doesn't matter whether it's a movie, bus, train, or plane, the issuer has the right to revoke the rights given by the ticket whenever they want. It's almost like a rental agreement that can be broken whenever the hell they feel like it for whatever reason they want. I like the focus on how the cops conducted themselves because that's the thing that I'm still scratching my beard about. It's just bad for United and the cops as a group in general. Anyway, just wanted to add perspective to what rights you actually get when you buy a ticket to anything. Shout out to, I guess he's shouting at his other Ohio Diamond Club fans, Hot Beverages, Buckeye Fitzy, Bourbon Beard, and Spiced and Hoppy. If you would like to email the show, you can do so at justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Again, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. If you would like free stickers, you can sign up for the stickers or DIAF mailing list at bit.ly/stickers or sorry, bit.ly/stickers or DIAF. Of course, you can follow me Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Justin R. Young. For Snapchat, what are we doing this week? Just give me a thumbs up. How about that? Thumbs up. We got a positive spring vibe going on. Thumbs up. And of course, you can hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. And if you are in need of any personal injury litigation in the state of Florida, remember to call Ryan the Big Cat LaPointe. Folks, that about wraps up the show today. Patreon.com/JURY. We're reopening the In Your House tour officially. Folks, if you find yourself in any of these situations, shoveling out a bunch of mail, getting your hopes up about the Guardians of the Galaxy, trying to defend the custody of your kids from Alex Jones, or moving tax day to 420, remember your old pal Justin Robert Young told you to please
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.